Thank you, Judge Ginsburg. Good morning, and may it please the court. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Because some of the very documents that the SEC claims are privileged in this FOIA action were previously produced and made public, the district court erred by concluding that there could be no subject matter waiver as a matter of law, notwithstanding the record evidence.
With the documents that were produced as Brady material, correct? I'm sorry, or Rule 16 material, which was it?
The record is unclear on that, on why they were produced, Your Honor.
Were they Jenks Act? Is the Jenks Act still in effect?
The Jenks Act is still in effect, although some defense attorneys might disagree on that. But as far as I understand, Your Honor, these were not produced as Jenks material. Again, the record just doesn't speak to why these documents were produced, and that's part of the problem with the district court's conclusion.
What basis do you have for inferring that 11 documents having been produced share anything with the 103 that were not produced, other than that they are handwritten and concern conferences and teleconferences in that case?
Judge Ginsburg, I think the issue here is that the record evidence we have, the SEC's affidavits and the Vaughn Index, describe each of these documents, both the 11 that we believe are public and the 103 that are not, in exactly the same fashion. They're communications among the same SEC agency officials with the same people.
They all had to be produced in the criminal case, though, right? Some of them may have been exculpatory, others not. Some may have been intended for introduction at trial, others not. So there was a presumption of good faith in the government's proceeding at the criminal trial and in its description on the Vaughn Index, for that matter. So what basis do you have for overcoming that?
Well, I think the issue here is
complete speculation. You have nothing.
Well, no, Your Honor. I would respectfully disagree.
Don't disagree. Give me something.
Well, I think Rule 6, I mean, if we look at Rule 16 itself and the district court's conclusion that, or speculation rather, that those documents were material under Rule 16, that doesn't actually answer the question of whether they should have been produced. Rule 16A2 permits the government
to withhold. District court may have erred in speculating, but that doesn't mean that you can speculate.
That's right, Your Honor. But Rule 16A2 permits the government to withhold privileged but otherwise material documents during a criminal trial. In this case, we know the 11 documents that the government produced were privileged. The SEC has said as much in its Vaughn Index. So this idea that Rule 16 somehow compelled the production of these documents, therefore there can be no subject matter.
It compelled production if they were going to be used at trial, doesn't it? We don't do Perry Mason trials.
Oh, that's right. Right,
no big surprises.
That's right, Your Honor, but we would argue that if the government intended, so for example, let's assume that they were produced under Rule 16A1E2, which requires the government to produce any documents that it intends to use in its case in chief, we think there's a big issue with subject matter waiver if you have certain documents that were produced, certain privileged documents that were produced,
the government... Are you saying that if in a criminal trial the government waives work product privilege with respect to 11 documents, that it's waived work product privilege with respect to any document that falls within that class?
No, Your Honor, we're not saying that. What we're saying is based on the record evidence that we have below in this FOIA action, there's no way to distinguish, and the SEC hasn't made any attempt to distinguish between those documents that were produced and those documents that were withheld. So as a theoretical matter, it is absolutely possible that the government has not waived subject matter waiver. Our argument is that the district court erred on this record.
You know, the mischief that kind of your argument would cause reminds me that during the waning days of the Clinton administration, there was a policy in place on FOIA requests, that even though we can object to this, even though there's an exemption to disclosing it, if we look at it and it's not going to cause any harm that we can think of, just let it go. And in fact, tons of material were disclosed during that period. Does that mean that any time in the future, if there's a request for the same category of documents, that the government, quote, has waived any objection?
No, Your Honor. I mean, I think...
Well, what's the difference between that and this case? I don't see any difference.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I think here we're only talking about Exemption 5, and we're only talking about privilege. And so there's confidentiality issues that arise in that context. But I think the issue here, Your Honor, is that the mischief, as you described it, is caused by the lack of record. We have these public documents that the SEC has, in fact, never acknowledged are public. It made no attempt in its bond index or its declarations to distinguish between the public documents and those that it's withholding them all on the same privilege. And that's the issue. That's why we think summary judgment was inappropriate on this record. You can't get from here to there.
These 11 packets of notes or whatever they were have become public?
Yes, Your Honor, they have. They were attached to public pleadings, and they were subject of oral arguments.
So any argument that you have regarding disclosure of these 11 documents is moot?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, because the SEC hasn't actually confirmed that these 11 sets of documents are the same documents.
If you've got them and they're public, what's it matter whether the SEC confirms it or not?
I think it matters in terms of whether it's moot for those 11 cases. The district court assumed that we had those documents, Your Honor, but we don't have them. We have no confirmation from the SEC.
You don't have them. You just said they were attached to public filings. Why don't you have them? And you were counsel for the defendant in the Connecticut case. So you were there. You've got them in your case file.
Your Honor, we believe that the notes are the same as those that have been withheld and are listed on the Vaughn Index, but part of the problem here is that we can't distinguish between those notes that were withheld and those that were not on the basis
of
information.
If they're not the same, then you don't have an argument at all.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the district court assumed they were the same for purposes of its decision.
So if they are the same, they've been released. If they're not the same, you don't have a case.
Well, I wouldn't say that we don't have a case because we have different issues with the SEC because at that point I'm staring at documents that they should have logged on their Vaughn Index or should have produced to us and were not. So I think it's the case changes. It's a very different case at that point, Judge Ginsburg.
Does your present argument depend on the idea that the exemption does not cover matters that are routinely discoverable in litigation, or is that an independent point?
I think the issue, as we see it, is that the SEC has chosen to only invoke Exemption 5 and specifically privilege over these documents, and that because some of the documents that they're withholding as privileged have been produced or in the public record, and some are not. To that extent, yes, Your Honor,
Yes, what?
Our argument does focus on Exemption 5.
Which is, like we have said time and again, applicable in civil litigation, to discovery in civil litigation.
Yes, Your Honor.
But you're seeking documents on the ground that they were discoverable in criminal litigation.
No, Your Honor. We're seeking documents on the basis that the SEC has withheld a bucket of documents as privileged, and we believe that a portion of that bucket of documents has already been produced and been public, which to us questions the integrity of the privilege, the 11 documents.
All right. Well, that's what I was asking you. Does your waiver argument, which this is what you're talking about, subject matter waiver?
Yes, Your Honor.
It all depend upon the notion that the matters would have been routinely discoverable, should have been revealed in the criminal litigation.
No, Your Honor. We believe that if any party were in litigation with the SEC right now, and these notes at issue were somehow relevant to that matter and sought during the discovery process, because of the prior subject matter waiver, the SEC would have an obligation in civil litigation to turn these over. Our argument does not turn on the fact that there was underlying criminal litigation. It turns on the fact that these documents are in the public record.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Radkovich.
Great. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Michelle Lowe with the U.S. Attorney's Office here on behalf of the Securities and Exchange Commission. This case raises the issue of whether 114 notes that were authored by SEC enforcement staff of interviews and conversations with witnesses and their counsel in the context of an accounting fraud investigation were properly withheld as attorney work product under Exemption 5. Irrespective of whether a small subset of these notes had been produced previously by a different federal agency, the Department of Justice, in a criminal proceeding. This court's decisions in Cotone, Martin, and the recently enacted Section 24F1A of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934 compel the finding that there has been no waiver of the work product privilege, and the SEC's withholding is proper. There's a second issue of whether 109 of these 114 notes are additionally protected under the deliberative process privilege. Because all 114 notes are work product, I will just address that issue first because it may be potentially dispositive, and we believe it is, of the entire case. Now, it's been represented that the record is unclear as to why the 11 notes that Williams and Connolly claims were produced, under what provision they were produced under. But taking a look at JA 135 and 136 and JA 167, it was Williams and Connolly that made the representation to the district court that these 11 sets of notes were previously produced pursuant to Rule 16. Now, it's uncontested that all the notes are work product. By saying that the prior disclosure of 11 notes...
It was pursuant to a discovery request?
I'm sorry?
They were produced pursuant to a discovery request?
They said that the 11 notes were produced pursuant to Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure
16. Was there a discovery request?
I'm not aware of the exact... whether there was a discovery request or not.
Wouldn't that be of some significance if the discovery request was narrowly framed?
Well,
produce all notes between the period of X and Y.
Well, there's no evidence whether it was produced pursuant to a discovery request or not. The only representation that Williams and Connolly made to the district court, which the district court accepted on summary judgment, was that these were produced in the course of the criminal proceeding.
You have access to the criminal trial record, don't you?
Well, I have not.
Pleadings and...
Because they are the party that has is making an argument as to waiver, it was the burden that Williams and Connolly bore to show that there was a waiver and the circumstances giving rise to any such waiver that they were claiming. They certainly could have, if it was that these were made pursuant to a discovery request.
Assume there's a discovery request, mm-hmm. And do we know whether the discovery request in the criminal case encompassed all 114 notes?
I do not know that, and that there's no indication of that in this record, Your Honor. Now, we believe as to the 11 notes that have been previously produced, if it is the case that they have been previously produced, this is moot, and the request for it is no longer in dispute in this case. As to the remaining sets of notes, Williams and Connolly's argument conflates the two independent schemes by which a criminal defendant may obtain documents from the government. And these are subject to different standards under the FOIA and under criminal discovery obligations. As this court held in Cotone, a constitutionally compelled disclosure to a single party simply does not enter the public domain and doesn't result in a waiver of those documents. Williams and Connolly also claims that this district court erred in failing to make a materiality determination as to the other sets of notes, and that certainly would work the mischief that has been noted earlier. The SEC is simply not required under FOIA to distinguish between the subject matter of the notes that are material in the Forbes case that were produced because they were material in the Forbes case and the subject matter of notes that may not have been produced. That's not what the FOIA requires. FOIA simply requires that the agency demonstrate that the agency's withholdings fit within the claimed exemption, and the SEC has done that in this case. I want to turn briefly to the waiver argument and whether the SEC's production of these notes to DOJ effectuated a waiver. We hold that it does not. Martin controls this case, and if it is the case that 12 U.S.C. 1821T was the decision, was the ruling on which Martin depended, we also point to the recently enacted Section 24F1A.
It's not retroactive.
It does not have a retroactivity provision in it, but there's a two-step process in determining retroactivity. And the second part of that is determining if Congress hasn't spoken to the issue, to take a look at what effect it has on the rights that the party had at the time it filed suit or took the action. And in the Center for Biological Diversity action that we cited, the Ninth Circuit case that we cited, the only action that Williams and Connolly took here was to request the documents through a FOIA request and file suit. It didn't take any other action in reliance against on then existing law. And so under that case and Landgraf decision, where the intervening statute just authorizes or affects the propriety of prospective relief, here it would be an injunction that they're seeking. There is no impermissible retroactive effect. Now, 109 of these documents were also withheld under the deliberative process privilege, and they are all covered by the attorney work product, but in the event that the court reaches the second issue, it's clear from Baker and Hostetler, that notes taken by an agency officials often fall within deliberative process privilege. Here we have Mr. Froelich's declaration stating that these notes revealed mental impressions and it had constitute a process by which the decisions as to how to proceed at an ascendant investigation were made. And so these, we believe, comfortably fell within the deliberative process privilege.
Suppose a lot of it's strictly factual.
Well, what happens a lot with notes is, especially notes of conversations, is there's a selection that takes place, a selection of the salient facts that you may want to take into account, may want to note for future reference. And the decisions of this court have held that when that is the case, these factual material are inextricably intertwined with the deliberative portions. And therefore, the process of selecting what salient material to include in the notes is by itself deliberative. If the court has no further questions, we would respectfully request the district court's decision be affirmed.
I think the issue is not whether they were produced pursuant to Rule 16. The issue, the way the district court framed the issue, is whether they were compelled.
Isn't our review here de novo?
The rule is de novo. Yes, sir.
It's a difference. Why do we care what the district court said about that?
Well, I'm just responding to the argument. The issue is compulsion.
Well, Rule 16 is only triggered if there's a request from the defense. What was the request that Williams and Connolly put in?
I don't know the exact words of that discovery request, Judge Randolph.
This is a request you made in another case.
Correct, Your Honor.
You're now saying caused the SEC to waive.
No, Your Honor, we're not saying that the SEC, even if we make the request, Your Honor, let's assume that we make a request that asks for these notes. Rule 16 does not require that the government turn those notes over. Rule 16A2 permits the government to withhold privileged materials.
It only is triggered by a request, and the extent of the production is determined by the extent of the request. And all I'm asking you is, what was the request? Seems to me a perfectly natural question you don't know the answer to.
It's, well, there is nothing in this record on
well,
that
of course
request.
Not. I, you know, this
well,
is
it would have been yours to put in. Yeah. Further questions?
Your Honor, if I could briefly wanted to talk about the deliberate process privilege. I don't think the SEC...
Okay, take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. The SEC sets forth a novel proposition that notes taken with of telephone conversations with targets of an investigation somehow reflect their deliberate process, and that the facts they decide to write down are protected by the deliberate process privilege. We believe this proves too much. It could be classic attorney work product, but the only time this court has ever held that facts are somehow protected by the deliberative process privilege is when an agency official takes a large set of facts and culls them to a key summary, like happened in MapAth or in Ancient Coin Collectors.
All of those cases were not notes of conversations with third parties, right? I mean,
That's correct, Judge Randolph. They tend to be notes of agency meetings that reflect communications among agency officials.
Right.
And with that, Your Honor, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lowe. Thank you. Case is submitted.